4 members of a state drunk and driving task force resigned yesterday in protest.
In their resignation letter, the 4 OWI task force members, 2 doctors, 2 health officials, criticized the Department of Transportation for, in effect, being too close to alcohol industry groups, allowing them to influence plans to curb drunk driving in Wisconsin.
Joining us now in studio is Dr. Richard Brown, a family health practitioner and professor at UW-Madison. He was one of 4 OWI task force members who resigned yesterday. Rich, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Veronica.
So why did you and 3 of your colleagues decide to resign from the DOT's impaired driving task force?
Well, when we first joined the committee, we thought it would be a wonderful opportunity to meet with other experts and policymakers and really get serious about what we could do to address our state's terrible drunk driving problem. But over the couple of years that I was part of the committee, I was very disappointed that, first of all, there were no regularly scheduled meetings. When meetings were called, they were called at the last minute, which unfortunately meant I could never attend the meeting. And we were asked to look at documents where there were already foregone conclusions, and we were asked to vote yes or no and not really have meaningful input, which is a real shame because the 4 of us in particular really have a lot of background in this area. We are equipped with lots of knowledge about a lot of research that has been done elsewhere on policies and programs that we would have hoped to try and bring to Wisconsin to really get serious about addressing this problem.
Now, you wanted your voices to be heard. You said the meetings were not scheduled regularly with short notice, and therefore you weren't able to attend. Your voices weren't able to be heard. Do you put that down to a lack of transparency and insincerity of effort, or do you put that down to disorganization?
You know, it's really hard to know. I guess my major concern is that this can be, and this could have been, and perhaps still could be, an opportunity to bring scientifically based, proven effective policies and programs to the state, and we hope that can still happen.
Now, one of your critiques was that there was too much influence by the Tavern League here in Wisconsin. How would you expand on that? What did you see as going on there?
Well, honestly, it's hard to know for sure. It was rather striking that in the most recent draft report, the Tavern League was the only organization mentioned by name as collaborating with the state. And I think I hold no grudge against the Tavern League. Clearly, they are set up to support their members whose whole livelihood depends on selling alcohol. So I accept that. That's a fine role for them to play. But I think we need to keep in mind that the way they see the world is going to be slanted a bit differently from people whose primary mission is to decrease drunk driving and the binge drinking that inevitably fuels it.
Now, the Tavern League's Pete Madlin has said that he hasn't been at a meeting since last August. So the implication there, how can the Tavern League be having undue influence if they really haven't been present since last August? What would you say to that?
Well, we all know that influence can occur in different ways, and whether it's at a meeting or behind the scenes, it's really hard to tell.
Now, you have encouraged through the task force, the DOT, to implement scientifically tested methods that work, and you said that you saw that there was not too much interest in doing so. What sorts of things were you hoping to move forward, and what sorts of obstacles did you come across?
Well, I would point you and your listeners to a wonderful document that is freely accessible on the web. It's put out by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and it's called Countermeasures That Work. And they summarize 32 different kinds of policies and programs that have been tried to address drunk driving in the country. And they identify 6 as having the top level of evidence, 5 stars. Then there are 8 more that have 4 stars, which are pretty good. And then there's a bunch of others that have weaker evidence. So if we compare that list of 5-star and 4-star items with what the committee is proposing, we see that most of the items the committee is proposing to engage in really have no research behind them. They are marketing efforts, and the kind of which have really been proven ineffective. There is an effort to get a better presence on social media. Nobody's ever found that actually decreases drunk driving. There is one item here which I would certainly support, which is to increase the number of OWI courts. They can be really helpful to leverage alcoholics into treatment and perhaps prevent them from drunk driving in the future. but it's very vague how many OWI courts they would aim to establish, where's the funding going to come from. So the recommendations that the committee has put forward are so anemic compared to the kinds of policies and programs that decades of research have proven effective elsewhere and could be working here.
Another example of a move that DOT was interested in pursuing but that you were critical of was increasing education to teenagers. Why have you been critical of that, and why would the DOT want to pursue that avenue if it's not working?
Well, honestly, that tends to be people's knee-jerk response. When there is a problem, let's do education. But unfortunately, lots and lots of research has shown that educating young people alone does not change drinking behaviors. It does not reduce drinking and driving. So we need to be looking way beyond education to more sophisticated approaches.
I want to take a moment here to talk about Wisconsin's drinking issues and how we compare elsewhere. How do Wisconsin's OWI rates compare to other states?
Well, actually, the last time the federal government surveyed the population in all states, we came out number one in the people who reported drinking and driving. Just under 25% of adults in our state readily admit to drinking and driving at least once in the previous month before the survey. And that clearly is in excess of the rest of the states, the average for which is only 13%. We also lead the nation many years where we're near the top of the list in binge drinking. And a lot of people don't understand that if we're going to address our drunk driving problem, we've got to address binge drinking. It's inevitable that people have to binge drink pretty much if they're going to reach that level of 0.8. And there's many people who maybe set out not to drink and drive earlier in the evening, but once they are intoxicated from binge drinking, they clearly are going to lose some of their judgment and get behind the wheel. And so there are certain policies and programs that could help prevent intoxicated people from getting behind the wheel. But we have to go further. We need to also decrease our binge drinking rates in this state. And there's several kinds of policies and programs that research has found effective in decreasing binge drinking as well that our state is not nearly fully implementing.
So if you got the chance to do all of this again, the DOT has said it's going to reach out to the four of you who resigned yesterday and keep the channel of communication open. But if you had the chance to do this over, what would you want to be done differently, and what sorts of things would you want to be approached?
Well, I would hope that there would be regularly scheduled meetings that we could all plan on attending. I would hope there could be more open agendas to get suggestions from committee members rather than having us consider documents that are essentially done up in advance and almost seem to be foregone conclusions. And if given the chance, I would certainly be recommending some of those five-star policies that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration recommends. For example, sobriety checkpoints is a very effective way at discouraging drunk driving. In our state, legislation prevents localities from implementing sobriety checkpoints, so we could clearly do better there. There's lots of research that shows if we systematically screen people for binge drinking and intervene in healthcare settings, we can decrease not only binge drinking but drunk driving. One study in Wisconsin showed that when binge drinkers received those services, they got into 50% fewer car crashes in the next year. So this is the kind of thing that would be much more effective than the policies and programs the committee has been discussing. Now, whenever recommendations are issued about the kinds of policies and programs that are effective, the first thing we tend to hear is, well, wait a second, we just don't have the funding. And that's another direction we need to go. Our state is second or third lowest in its beer tax, and other alcohol taxes are slightly higher. But we need to raise our alcohol taxes for two reasons. One is that if we raise them substantially enough, the cost of alcoholic beverages will go up enough, prior studies have shown, that we will actually discourage young people from drinking and binge drinking and drunk driving. And in many states, they've actually documented many lives saved by raising alcohol taxes. And then if we did raise alcohol taxes, we would certainly have money to fund very sorely needed prevention, intervention, and treatment programs.
Dr. Brown, thank you so much for joining us and coming into the studio. studio today.
Thanks very much for having me.
We've been talking to Dr. Richard Brown, a family health practitioner and professor at the UW-Madison, whose research interests include substance abuse prevention and intervention. He was one of four OWI task force members who resigned yesterday from the task force in protest.